This is side one of tape two of the July 30th, 1986 interview with Camilla Mickey McRae of Jacksonville, Florida. The interviewer is David Taylor, and this interview is being done in connection with the Maritime Heritage Survey Project.
Have you ever been close to the marsh and seen what it was like, really been up to it and handled that marsh, what we call marsh that grows down there on the water's edge?
Yes, yes, I have. Yeah.
You know, it's real sticky. The very top of it is sticky. You know, I mean, comes to a sharp point. Mm-hmm. I don't mean sticky like gum, but I mean sharp pointed, that little stickier.
The marsh grass you're talking
yes,
about?
Yes, the very top of it mm-hmm. comes to a sharp point and really is sticky, so it's difficult to walk through it. In fact, you can't hardly walk through it because it's so spongy and wet, the land that it grows up through. Mm-hmm. But it makes a good refuge for the animals. There's lots, at that time, there was lots and lots of animals that lived down there in that spongy, and especially the snakes. And it's really remarkable that we didn't have more snakes. I don't remember but once or twice Daddy killing a rattlesnake or a water moccasin the whole time we lived down there. Now, we had other snakes. At one time, my daddy had a lot of those clay red flower pot mm-hmm. type things that he would get plant his seedlings in, and they were lined up on the outside of a shed like where he kept his farm implements and all. And so one time he had us kids go out there and move them all for something. He was going to use them. Mm-hmm. And the longest, biggest old red snake was all up under there that almost scared me to death. Oh, and I think they're called rat snakes or chicken snakes. They're harmless, they say, but just to look at them was terrible. And once my mother had hens, and the hens would make nests all sort of places. So one made a nest up in the fork of a tree, so she'd just climb a couple of steps up the ladder and reach up to get the egg out, and one time she reached up in there on a snake, and I mean, she got down off that ladder and hurried. Oh, but we didn't have too many occasions to worry about snakes. We had those long little teen green snakes mm-hmm. quite a bit in the trees, and once in a while one of them would drop down in front of you. But regardless of whether it was poisonous or not, I was afraid of them. Mm-hmm. There's just something about a snake that terrifies me.
You were talking about your mother being a pretty self-sufficient person. I was wondering if she did any kind of handwork skills, needlework, things like
yes,
that.
Yes, my mother certainly did. With all of us, five girls, she made our clothes. She would sit up at night and sew our clothes, mostly my sisters that were in school, make their school dresses. Mm-hmm. And she says sometimes to 2 o'clock in the morning to finish a dress so they'd have something to wear to school the next day. And she made all of our underwear. At that time, I've heard a lot of people talk about using flour sacks and feed sacks for clothes. Well, my mother used those for dishcloths. Mm-hmm. She would wash them until they would be soft, and she'd hem them and put a little crocheted edge on them, and those would be her dish drying cloths or her dish cloths that she washed the dishes with. But I don't ever remember using feed sacks for dresses or for underwear. There was nothing wrong with them because they were soft. Mm-hmm. They still had an imprint on them. But what she would do when she would go to town, she would buy that soft yellow homespun. It came in different grades, but she would buy the softer, finer grade and buy the bolt mm-hmm. and bring it home, and she would make our underwear. I don't remember how the others were made, but as a small child, she'd make a little top with the straps that just went up and around, and it buttoned down the back, mm-hmm. and a vest that just would come to the waist, and then buttons would be around on the waist, maybe two in front, one on each side, and at the back. And then she'd make me little pants that would button to that, and the pants would be sort of short. And those were our sleeping clothes. I don't remember ever as a child when we lived out there having pajamas or gowns. We just slept in our underwear. Mm-hmm. And the only way we had of getting a bath would be a big wash tub by the stove. Mm-hmm. in the winter time, and in the summertime, we just bathe out in the creek, take our soap down there and bathe and wash our hair in the creek.
Yeah.
Because it was flowing water, and it was clean, and it was soft water compared to, you know, what other water would be. But Mama always had a big barrel and would catch the rainwater just for our hair, if we wanted to wash our hair in rainwater. And that was one of the whippings I got. I got very few whippings. But what I'd do, when the rain barrel would get full and the water would be running off, I'd pick up a pine straw and lay it up there and watch it like my boat, and it'd float along, and then it'd flow over the side and fall to the ground. I'd pick it up, put it back up there. Well, she didn't want me to do that because she didn't want any trash in her rainwater. She wanted it clean so that we could all wash our hair with it. So she'd keep telling me not to do it, and I guess I didn't pay any attention to her. So she picked up another straw and switched my legs. Now that was the whipping I had. And our granddaddy, her father lived with us a lot, and he shared the room with my brother. Her mother died when I was only a year old, but her father lived. His name was James Richard David Beatty Fleming Terrell. He was an Englishman, and he had all those names. Of course, he wasn't born in England, but he was of English descent. He was raised in Georgia. And he lived with his mother on a small plantation, and he was about 10 years old when Sherman had his famous march through Georgia. And his father was dead, and his mother and he and an overseer ran their farm or plantation, and it wasn't very small, large or pretentious or anything, but they did have some slaves, and they did have a few buildings, outbuildings, one where the overseer stayed with his family and where the slaves stayed. And he said that they got word that the Union Army was coming through, and so they didn't have time to do anything except take an old milk cow. They had a milk cow that they were able to take way down from the house. There was a pond of water down there that was about knee deep on that waste milk cow. So they took her down there, and for why, I don't know, but they took her and all of them got down in that water and stayed down in that water, and they couldn't milk the cow, and the cow would low because her bag got so full of milk, and she got so painful, I guess, because of that. And the soldiers, he was terrified of them. He just knew they were going to kill them all, and that they were going to hear the lowing of the cow. And a child that age, you can imagine how terrifying that would be. And they did destroy everything that they had. They burned the house, and all that they couldn't take, if they couldn't take anything, they'd cut it up or burn it. And they left absolutely nothing for them to go back to. And when they knew that they were gone, and it was safe for them to come out of that swamp and out of that pond of water, they went back to find absolutely nothing. But they did have the overseer's house. And so then they had to, just him and his mother was there to start all over again. I guess the slaves ran off with the Union soldiers or something. I don't know whatever happened to him. In fact, when he'd tell this tale, I was so young, I wouldn't get the particulars and the details, but I do remember him telling those, and so I know that much is a fact. But together, some way, they were able to get their farm going, but he never liked Yankees from that day to this. He never forgot them, and he hated them, and damn Yankee was just one word.
Yeah.
And I can see why. And so my sister, one of my sisters, married a Western boy, and now he loved Ray because he was a Georgia boy, and that's where Grandpa was from, so that was fine. He loved Ray.
all of them are from Georgia except this one from Utah.
Yes, but because he wasn't a Southern boy, he called him, well, he's just a Western Yankee. since he wasn't a Southerner, he was just a Western Yankee.
Yeah. Hmm. You were talking about the lack of good roads down along the river there. Was there a regular boat that passed through that would carry people along the river? Any kind of a ferry or anything like that?
No, nothing that would take you across the river. But like I mentioned, there was the boats that you could go to New Berlin and get on. They were mail boats and passenger boats, but even the mail boat would take passengers. And the name of one of the men that piloted the boat was Captain Smith. My sister remembered that name and told me his name was Captain Smith. So I think he must have been a friend of my mother's and father's for her to remember him, but I didn't remember him. But the Monitor and the Merrimack, and I thought one of them was the Three Friends, but now I'm small and I might be mixed up about that. But my sister, the older ones, remembered that the names of two of them that they could remember was the Monitor and the Merrimack. But they now, I thought there was a small place there at Fulton, a small community where the boat stopped at Fulton. And there, where I told you, at Brooks Scanlon Docks, see, people would get on and go take their produce and sell it at different places, or livestock or whatever. And it was just sort of like an old country bus, you know, how the long time ago the buses, greyhounds even, would stop at every little pig trail, and people would get on with their chickens and take them to the town to sell them. And you know, they'd have several chickens maybe in a cage or all tied up in a bundle and take them. And that's kind of where it was on the boat. They used... Well, where is Eastport?
That's out there where the Gulf Terminal is.
Well, that's where I told them that it was. It's right there in the bend of the river. And the piling, old pilings are still right there, where it used to be a nice dock and some businesses along the dock. It wasn't a great big thing, but it was big enough for the dock, for the boats, the small boats that plied the river. Now, I'm not talking about ocean-going liners. I'm just talking about the small boats that plied the river. And I don't know what happened to the big ocean liners when they got into Jacksonville, but our little boat would go there, like I say, it was the end of Laura Street or end of Ocean Street, which is the first street that runs like Maine, but it's east of Maine. All along there. And it wasn't pretty. It wasn't nice. It wasn't taken care of like you see the waterfront now. No, it was just the docks that went out over the water and half sunk, a lot of old rusted half sunken boats and old rowboats that the bottom was knocked out of, and they were half sunken and too old to manipulate, you know, up and down the river and so on.
Fishing boats, sometimes they'd clean the fish and shrimp and throw the stuff overboard. And of course you had lots of seagulls and all that around there all the time for handouts.
Well, did people ever live in boats on the river?
Yes.
Yeah?
They had houseboats, but mainly they were up docked around where I was speaking of, up in town, near town. But I don't know of any down in our area where people lived on houseboats. But I know that they did live on houseboats. But they weren't luxurious things. They were just what was absolutely necessary in order to live.
Right. Were you telling me before that you went to school in New Berlin?
My sister did. I was too young. See, we lived down there from the time I was 3 until I was almost 8. But the last 2 years we lived down there, they didn't have a school at New Berlin. And my older sisters and my brothers had to come to town, and they stayed with my aunts, my mother's sister, or else my daddy's sister, and went to school in town. But so that's why my daddy finally sold his property and moved back to town, is because he had to make a different arrangements than that. So after they closed the school there, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Rutherford was a school, state school superintendent, and for some reason, I guess there wasn't funds. I really don't know why they closed down the school in New Berlin, but they did. And there was maybe they didn't have the money to send teachers down there or something. But anyway, they closed down the school, And he made those provisions for 2 years, but then he had to sell. And so, see, I was almost 8 years old when I started school. Mm-hmm. Because I started in the fall, and I would have been 8 in December.
Yeah.
So I was a big girl when I started school. But my first day of school was at Riverside Number 4. Do you know where that is?
Yes, I do. It's right off
at
the
Park Street,
there.
Yes. Yeah. And, well, that was the school, beautiful school then, that I went when I first started school. And I remember the first day that I was in school, my sister Alice is just older than me. By then, she was in the sixth grade. See, I should have been in the second, mm-hmm. which there was about 3.5 years difference in our ages would have made it right. But when she was in the grades then in that school was 1 through 6, and she was in the sixth grade, and I just starting in the first grade. And we had just moved to town, and I wasn't used to being around people. I was like a wild cat or rabbit or something, you know. And all those people, all those kids, and all that noise, I wanted my mama. And I could do anything but put my head on my desk and cry and cry. And everybody was, I remember, they were so kind and nice to me. And the teacher tried to talk to me and get me consoled. And I wasn't ugly. I didn't fuss or fight or anything like that. I was just heartbroken. I wanted to come home. So finally it dawned on somebody. I guess they looked on my papers or something and saw I had a sister in another grade. So they sent for my sister, and she tried to do something with me. I wouldn't do anything but cry. I couldn't quit crying. So they let her bring me home. So my mama gave me a little talking to, and the next day I went back. I was all right.
Yeah.
I didn't cry anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think I was like that first.
Were
day
you?
School.
I remember my daughter saying she wanted to be so big and show off and how smart she was. And the first chair she sat in, it dumped her over. And she was so embarrassed in front of all those kids. I didn't think about being embarrassed. I didn't even know what the word was.
Yeah.
I just knew I wanted to go home.
Yeah, quite a change from living in the country.
Yes, it was.
That's a, as you say, a
because,
very large school there, too.
Yes. It was a lot of children, you know. It was a very popular area of town at that time, there mm-hmm. at Riverside Park.
Mm-hmm. Have you lived in Jacksonville then all of your life?
Yes. All except that few years we were down at St. Charles, and I guess you could call that Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Lived here all my life.
Yeah.
I was born there on Philly Street, and we lived round and about until we went to St. Charles, and then we've been very fortunate. I've only lived in about 3 houses. My daddy owned our home.
Yeah.
He bought a home when he sold that land. He bought a home, and we lived in that until I got married. And then my husband and I lived in a home in Springfield for 31 years, and then we moved back. This is the side of town I was raised in as a teenager and went to John Gorey and Lee High School.
Mm-hmm.
And then all our kids went to Jackson, graduated from Jackson.
How many children have you had?
6.
Oh, boy, that's a pretty big family.
Yeah,
too.
And we have, I think it's 18 or 19 grandchildren.
Oh, okay.
The reason I hesitate, we have some step-grandchildren
mm-hmm.
that are just really darling. I think they love us more than our grandchildren. We haven't had them in the family a year yet, but they're really fine, 2 boys, really fine children. So I think when we add all that up, we've got 19.
Yeah, that's quite
and 4 great-grandchildren.
Hmm.
So we're populating Duval County.
What are your best memories about living out there along the river, along the creek, I should say?
I think my very best memories is that our family was so happy. We didn't have any money, but we didn't need any money. We didn't even know what money was. We had all we wanted to eat, and we had enough to wear. And our mother sewed, and she made our clothes, and we had plenty to wear. And we had we were clean. We had plenty of things to keep clean because she really believed in cleanliness. Would you like me to tell you about wash day?
Yeah.
Now, I was too little. I didn't get in on this, but I've seen it all many times.
Mm-hmm.
My mother had a big iron wash pot that was out in the yard, and she'd build a fire under it. And she'd get the water boiling, and I've seen her make her own lye soap from cooking the fat, because my daddy would have hog killings. He had hogs, and he also had cows that he would slaughter at the right time of the year, in the fall when it got cold. But she would cook down that fat somewhere and put lye in it. I don't remember. I don't really know how. But anyway, that's the way old-timey people made soap. And they'd put, they wouldn't make it strong and put a little a perfume or something in them if it was going to be face soap. But if it's going to be wash soap, it was made with more lye and would be stronger. Mm-hmm. Well, she'd chip that up in that boiling water. And, excuse me, she'd put her white clothes in there. And they boiled. And then Daddy had made a long stick. It was bigger around than a broom handle or something. Mm-hmm. About three broom handles would make it be like that, about that long. And the end that went down in that lye soap was almost white. Mm. And it had gone down in that wash pot so long that it was rounded on the end and just as smooth and silky. And my sisters would lift that up, and my daddy had a what they call a battling block, and all it was where a big oak tree had been cut off, and it was about waist, not quite waist high, and they would lift those, and it was smooth, been polished off somewhere where it was smooth too, and they'd lift those clothes out of the boiling water and lay them up on there, and then they'd take that stick that they lift them up out and bang them. Bang them and bang them, and they'd turn them and hit them. That's why it was called the battling block. And when they got through that, then all the dirt was beat out of them, I guess. And then they had to put them in different tubs of water and swish them up and down in clean water. And all that water had to be pumped out of the pump. And they would go around to about three tubs till my mother couldn't see any soap left in that last rinse water. Then she'd let the girls, and she would help them wring them out and hang them on the clothesline. And her clothes were white, just really white. No dingy clothes at my mother's house. And her curtains were the same way, and her bed linens the same way. She knew how to keep them quiet from her mother, white, how to keep them white mm-hmm. from her mother. And that's the way they washed clothes. And, of course, my daddy had and my brother had dirty overalls where they'd get out there and plow and work in the field. And they'd come in dirty with old dirty socks and all, you know, and I guess underwear too. But they managed to keep it all clean. Mm. And we just had one day for washing. Then, when you didn't have washing machines or any way to help you, you just had Mondays. It was always wash day. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened every Monday. All the clothes and the beds were changed and everything. And then, I don't know if you remember or not, but way back then, there was no way to have elastic and a bottom sheet. Everything was the same kind of sheet. Mm-hmm. And when we'd get in bed, our feet would be sandy. Even though we brushed them off, they'd still have sand, you know. And every morning, that's bed had to be shook. Everything now, I never think of taking the bottom sheet off from wash day to wash day because there's no sand in the bed. But somehow, we didn't have any grass in the yard, and a little bit of sand was everywhere. Mm-hmm. So every morning, those sheets had to be taken completely off the bed and shook so that when we got to bed that night, there wouldn't be any sand in there. But it seemed like somewhere there'd be some by the next morning when we'd get up. But it was a lot more work.
Yeah, yeah.
But my mother would make bread. She'd buy a 25-pound sack of flour and bring it home from town. And she'd make up bread for that 25-pound sack of flour. It'd take her all day long. In 3 days, there wouldn't be a loaf. Oh. It would smell so good, that yeast bread. Yeah. And you could smell it all over those woods. And we just, of course, we had all sorts of fresh preserves and jellies from the fruit. Have you ever heard of a mayhaw?
Yes, I have.
Tree? Well, they don't grow very big. They grow about the size of a plum tree. And look, to me, best I remember, about like a wild plum tree, with tiny little round leaves on it like a wild plum. Mm-hmm. And mayhaw preserves or mayhaw jelly was the best. It's tart. Like, had to use a lot of sugar because they're bitter and sour. Mm-hmm. But they, after you get enough sugar, they have a wonderful flavor and make the best jelly. Mm-hmm. So we had wild plum and mayhaw jelly and grape jelly and all that made up enough to last us from one season to the next. And with that good homemade bread, oh, it was so good.
Are there any recipes that your mother used to make that you still make in your family?
Well, yes. I still make her bread and butter pickles. I made some this year. Mm-hmm. That's her recipe. And I don't use really her jelly recipes because I don't remember any of them. And now you can make jelly, you know, with sure gel and Certo. But my husband makes his, when we go to the mountains, he picks blackberries and makes his own jelly, and he never puts in any preservative in his. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how to make that kind. I have to use sure gel or Certo to make mine. Yeah. But I still use her pickle recipes. Mm-hmm. They're just delicious. I'll give you a jar if you like pickles when you leave. And we make fig jam, too. Do you like figs?
Oh, yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you a jar of fig jam, too.
You were talking about Mondays always being a wash day. Were there other chores that were handled on specific days?
Yes. The next day was ironing day. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they had to iron with a flat iron. An iron flat iron that was heated on the stove. And we only kind of ironing board we had was just a flat board that had been covered, and it laid from the table to the stove. And the irons were heated on the stove, and they'd always have to scrub them over a piece of cloth, because if you didn't, you might get smut or something on the garment you were ironing, mm-hmm. or the white shirt or something. Can you imagine ironing with anything that difficult now? Mm. Oh, I would hate to do that. And you know how ironing boards stand now. It's easy to put something across the end, but it was difficult to lift that ironing board up and put something on it and the iron not fall off on the floor or something. But it wasn't as easy as it is now. Mm-hmm. But I never did do that, but I've seen my mother and my sisters do it. That's the way they had to iron. And Tuesday was ironing day. And then Wednesday was house cleaning, and Saturday. Wednesday and Saturday was when the house was clean. But the house was swept through all the time. Every day, I mean, it was swept. Unless we had that sand on the kitchen floor, but that was left 2 or 3 days. And then when it was swept off, the floor, because see, we didn't have linoleum. We just had floors. Mm-hmm. And the floors, the boards, and it was wide boards. Wasn't tiny little boards that fit nice or anything. It just right. those old wide boards. Now, there wasn't any holes. No grass was growing up through them, anything like I have seen in houses. But they would really be pretty when that sand was swept off.
Now, you mentioned that when you were reading the piece mm-hmm. that you've written here about the sand and using that to clean the floors. Can you explain a little more about what you did and how that worked out?
Well, I think it must be the same way of using scouring material now. It must have some type of sand or something in it. I don't know just what, but it's an abrasion anyway. Mm-hmm. And we would go over there and we would take, in our rowboat, we would put a big wash tub at the front and at the back, and then we'd have to scatter around, either sit in the wash tub or around it or something, because they'd be as wide as a rowboat. Mm-hmm. And but coming back, we could sit up on top of the sand. There'd just be 4 or 5 of us sitting in that boat. And when we'd get home, they'd just I don't know how they got it up from the land and down where the dock was up to the kitchen door. I guess our brothers and sisters hauled it up there in smaller containers. But they would shovel it all over that floor till it was thick that you couldn't see the floor at all. Mm-hmm. And can't you imagine the mess that it made going up to the other parts of the house? But I didn't think about that as a child. No wonder they had to sweep the house every day. But it would stay on that floor until the sand turned dirty. After the sand turned dirty, then they'd sweep it off. That would take 2 or 3 days, I think, best I remember. And when they'd sweep it off, the old dirty sand would be swept off, but the floor would be, that sand would act as an abrasion and really clean the floor. All the grease, because when you have wood floors and grease spatters out of the pan, it goes right on that floor into the wood. Mm-hmm. And there's almost nothing that'll get it out, back-breaking work. Mm-hmm. That's why linoleum, whoever invented linoleum, was made a godsend to housewives. But that sand would act as an abrasion, and it would just whiten that floor like a bleach. Mm. Be beautiful.
Was that only the kitchen you did that?
Yes, only the kitchen. We used it only in the kitchen.
And
she had throw rugs up in the living area of the house and around our beds and all.
Yeah, and it was the walking around that would really.
Yes, I guess that's what it was.
Yeah.
With walking on it, see, would make it like an abrasion. I guess if it just sat there, it probably wouldn't do any good.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd all walk on it and go about our regular chores and business and eating, and because we ate in the kitchen. Now, we had a dining room, and we had furniture in the dining room, but the kitchen was so big that we had a big table in there, and we just ate in there. Mm-hmm. Hardly ever, unless we had company, eat in the dining area. Mm-hmm. Our house was built.
End of side one. Interview continued on side two. Side two of the second tape of the July 30th, 1986 interview with Camilla Mickey McRae.
Piece of paper.
Here, give you some of mine.
All righty. Now this is the creek, like along here, and then it turned and went up here, and then this is that landing I was telling you about, kind of turned like that.
Yeah.
But the house was back up here, and it had a long porch across the front. I might not get this just right, but anyway, this was the girls' room, I guess, and then it was kind of like that for the boys' room. Mm-hmm. And across here was the living room and our parents' room.
Mm-hmm.
And then across here was that open back porch I told you about.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that had to go to there because I remember our rooms opened off that porch in there, but this part was open. And then there was this walkway. You remember they built old-timey houses with the walkway, and then the kitchen and dining room was back out here because of fires.
Mm-hmm.
So this, I guess this was just the dining room, and you walked through it to the kitchen, but I remember our steps was down here. And right here was this tree, and right here was where that... bench was where we had the water, and I had walked out this door to get my water, and that's when mm-hmm. I went in there and pushed that wicker basket back against the door. Mm-hmm. And there was no way to get into our parents' room. There was a window here, but we had to go all the way through here and through the living room and to their door.
Oh, yeah.
Like that to get in. Now they had a window out on that porch, and of course the living room had a door and a window. It didn't have any windows here because there was a room there. But it had a door going down. Would you like to know a little bit about our Christmases out there?
Yes,
in the country?
I would, yeah.
Well, we had a tree out of the woods around us. I don't call it forest, but my daddy would select a tree and put it up for us. And we would cut out our own decorations. We would make popcorn or whatever we had. Sometimes we had enough berries we could string. And just the wild berries and string around on the tree. Mm-hmm. And my daddy would buy popcorn, and sometime they would string that. And sometime the kids would bring home enough colored paper that we could make those colored paper chains. But just the ornaments that we made is what we had. And except they bought candles that sat in a little thing that clipped on the tree. Have you ever seen those?
I've heard about them. I've never seen them.
Well, it was little silver things, and they would hold candles, and they would clip on the tree, and the candles would stand straight up around. And because I guess the tree was so green, there wasn't a lot of danger. But we could light the candles, but only when our parents was there to stand there and watch.
Yeah.
And so they let them stay lit for a certain length of time. Then we had to blow them all out. But we had that, and it was a beautiful tree. Now, we didn't have much money for gifts and things. Usually what we had in our stocking was some fruit. Like this man came by, we'd have oranges and some fruit, and if possible, maybe some nuts. And, you know, we used to have those, what we call Brazil nuts. Now we call them nicotos then. Have you ever heard them called nicotos?
No.
You mean, that's all I ever knew till I got grown, that they weren't anything but nicotos. But Brazil nuts and a few pecans and fruit was mainly what we got in our stocking. But we always had stockings, and we had a mantle. In this room, this was the chimney and the mantle here between these two rooms. And no,
between
here.
Parents, oh, between
no, here.
Parents uh-huh,
not here.
The living room.
Yeah, but it was in the living room. And
yeah.
In this corner is where we always put the tree. And there we always hung our stockings. So we always got something good in our stocking, but I mean good for a country child that didn't know any better, nothing expensive. And then Mama would make us a doll. Or Daddy would whittle us something. He was a good whittler. That's one thing that he could really outstandingly do. He'd whittle us a doll. One time he made me, and I was grown, but you remember when the Dione quintuplets were born?
Sure. Yeah.
I wish I hadn't thrown that out, but he on a little platform, just about this size, he made me five little beds, and he, on the beds, he, I guess, burning wood, each one of their names, and Mama put the little dolls in there, and cover, she made the covers and all for them. It was just a real cute little gift that she made. She made the clothes and dress the dolls, and he whittled out the little beds and made them on that platform for me. And here I am, grown with children almost. Well, I didn't have any children then because they're older than my first children, best I remember. I think they were born a couple of years before my oldest son was born. And I think they were born in 34 and or 35, and he was born in 36.
At your Christmases in your family, when would you open your gifts?
We always open our gifts Christmas morning.
Yeah.
I don't like this idea of opening gifts Christmas Eve. What have you got to look forward to? I like to save my gifts for Christmas morning, don't you?
Mm-hmm. That's the way we've always done it in my family.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people open Christmas Eve, but then when I get up Christmas morning, I don't have anything. I like to, I'm still a child when it comes to Christmas.
Yeah,
I love Christmas.
Of
he doesn't, but I do.
Oh, yeah.
Those days, we'd get up early, real early, and get all the children up, and they'd be still sleepy and all. It wasn't much problem, though, because they were looking for Santa Claus. And then, 8 o'clock was when they would change shifts on the fire department. And I would have one time keeping those kids. I'd go around, gather all of them, and put them up in my bed, because I didn't want to spoil the fun for him. I want him to see their eyes when they went in there and saw all that. And so I'd gather them all up and tell them stories and keep them in my bed till he'd come home. And then we could all go in together and see it together. Because I felt like he worked hard, you know. He didn't go out and buy the stuff. I had all that to do and make all the arrangements and everything for Christmas, but he provided it.
Yeah,
you didn't have a six-year-old.
That's what I was telling him. And so I didn't want to cheat him out of being able to see all that.
Yeah.
So that's what we did then. But as children, we always got up and on Christmas morning, saw our stockings and what we had. And it was fun because we always thought we got a lot, you know.
Yeah.
Even though, and maybe sometime we got a store-bought toy. Now I'm talking about when we lived in the country. When we moved back to town, we did.
Mm-hmm.
We got wagons and skates and things then. But out there, there wasn't any place really to use them anyway.
Yeah. What else would happen on Christmas Day in the country?
We always had company. We always had company. We had friends in town because we had lived in town. And my older sisters were old enough to have friends in town. See, I was too young. But they had younger sisters that were my age by then. So I had a cousin that I loved very much. And she had an older brother and older sisters that were on up. But she was my age, so all that bunch would come for Christmas. And then we had friends that lived in the neighborhood where we used to live, and sometimes they would come. So, and Mama always cooked a lot. We always had a lot of company. There was a big family of us, and she liked for us to have company. And she was a marvelous cook. I thought many times of the many days she would stay in the kitchen preparing for Christmas, you know, making desserts and things ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
to have candies and cookies and cakes on hand. And I thought she enjoyed it. And I'm sure to some extent she enjoyed it, but it was work too.
Mm-hmm.
But it never dawned on me that it was work because she did it year in and year out. When I got to be a mama and tried to do it too, I saw it was work. Wasn't all that much fun, you know, like I thought she was having. Oh, but we always were free to invite just as many of our friends as we wanted, and did always something to eat. It might not always be what we wanted, because I'm the kind, when I was little, I got where I didn't like a lot of things. And the reason I didn't is because when Daddy would have a garden, like if string beans came in, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, back then, either you canned them or you ate them. Mm-hmm. There was no freezing or any way to help you dispose of them. So we'd have to eat them, and it would be as long as they were producing, which is sometimes, 3 weeks or 2 months or something. And I got so sick of string beans, I couldn't stand to see them on the table. And that's just for instance, any of those vegetables sure. that lasted so long
yeah.
that I'd persuade Mama to go buy me a can of pineapple or something, you know. I just could not eat all that stuff. And for a long time, I didn't like vegetables, but now I do, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't care how good anything is, it becomes monotonous if you have to eat it too much.
Absolutely.
Even steak or rib roast or something, if that's all you got for a while, it becomes sickening.
That's
you just
true.
Couldn't stand
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And that's where I was by Daddy's good fresh vegetables. They got boring and I got sick of them quick.
Yeah, I know what that's like.
But our Christmases were really wonderful because one thing, we never had any, we might fuss a little among us kids. Now, I don't say we didn't, but never in front of my mother because she was the disciplinarian in our family. Daddy never hit us or scolded us in his life. He did get on one of my sisters for, they were late coming in on the boat, you know,
mm-hmm.
one time, and Mama was real upset. And she was so upset, she was about ready to pull her hair. That's why she was real hysterical, like,
yeah. Yeah.
because she thought they were all drowned in the river. And so when they finally got there and they saw them coming in the boat and knew that they were all right, then she got mad, see. So she was so mad, Daddy told her to let him handle it. And so he lined them all up and went at them like this, you know, and was telling them that they shouldn't do that because they were worrying Mama and, you know, what all she was going through, thinking they were all dead and everything. And while he was putting his finger in their faces, fussing at them, one of them fainted dead out. So you know how much he got on us. He never hit us in his life. And that's the only time I ever know he even fussed at us. I don't think he ever did after that because he saw we couldn't take him fussing at us, I guess. Because he never did, see. And then when he did one time, well, it was so out of character until
mm-hmm.
they just didn't even know what to think. Now, they used to Mama because she was our disciplinarian. See, Daddy wasn't there a lot. And when he was there, he was like my husband. He didn't want to spend what time he was home beating on his young'uns. And Reg didn't either. So I was a disciplinarian in our family. And that's where my mother, she was too. And if she looked at you, I'd rather do what she said than to get a spanking. I didn't want a spanking, so she never had any trouble with me
yeah.
that way. But I lost my train of thought. What was I going to tell you?
We were talking about Christmas. I'm not sure if you want to continue with that.
I guess I've told you all I can remember about Christmas. I just know that we had a real happy family. I've never heard my mother and father disagree among themselves. And I think that's what made our family so happy. I thought all families lived that way until I moved to town and saw how different families were.
Mm-hmm.
But we never had any arguments. We did what our mother said do. We didn't always want to do it, but she said do it, so we just had to do it. We
mm-hmm.
It never occurred to me I could get out of it by arguing because she wouldn't put up with that.
Mm-hmm.
And if I argue with my sister just older than me, I remember one time when my older sisters was sweeping, not the oldest one, but one of the older ones, and young and like I was had my Jackson ball down there. I was trying to play jacks, and she wanted me to move because she had to sweep before she could go to school that morning,
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't move, so she just kicked me with her foot. Now, she didn't kick me hard, but she nudged me, trying to push me out of the way. You know how one kid will do the other. Oh, I went screaming to Mama, so she really got on her for that, but I should have, that was my own fault. I should have got out of her way so she could get through and go on to school.
Mm-hmm.
But little things like that, of course, happen in families. But if we ever got in an argument about who was going to play with what doll or something, it was between us. We never let Mama know it because she wouldn't put up with it.
Mm-hmm.
So when mothers have children this day and age that fight, I hear them complain bitterly because they can't have discipline among their children. It's not the children. It's the mothers. They either don't know how to handle it or are too lazy to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was smart as a whip. Mentally and physically, and you didn't get nothing past her. She was there watching what was going on. And you have to be alert with children. You have to be positive with children and follow through. If she said, I'm going to whip you, you can best assured you're going to get a whipping.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember one time really praying that she wouldn't whip me. She told me I'd gotten out of earshot, and when she called, she wanted you to come. And I didn't hear her. And I shouldn't have gotten so far, because she didn't want us to get so far we couldn't hear her when she called her. So when I did come home, she wondered where I was. Well, I'd just been playing around, but I'd gotten too far, I couldn't hear her. So she said, I'm going to whip you for that. You know not to do that, and I'm going to whip you for that. Oh, I just knew she was, because if she said she was, she would. Well, she never did hardly ever whip me, but I just knew she was going to. I remember going out in the backyard and praying that she wouldn't whip me. I didn't want that whipping. I thought she'd never turn me loose if she ever did whip me. And sure enough, by the time she really talked to me, which her talking, I think, sometimes was bad as a whipping, she did a lot of that. And she'd take her knuckles and do your head like that. She'd never pop you in the face or hit you around like I've seen mothers do. But if you got in her way too bad, she'd knock you, not knock you, but just rub her fingers in your head, and that hurts. Have you ever had knuckles rubbed in your head?
Yeah.
That'll hurt. But she made up for it with so much love and kindness, and that's what I said. Our family was a real happy family, and she had a way of making us respect and love each other and working together. And it was a knack that she had, or maybe she learned it from her mother, I don't know. But I think it's something that a lot of people now lack.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
But she wasn't mealy-mouthed and just ready to let the wind whip her around. She was in charge of the situation, regardless of what it was. At least she had us thinking so. When I was 17 and got married, she still could manage me. Because she let us think she could, see whether she could or not. Now I know she couldn't. If I had done anything what I wanted to do then, she couldn't have helped it. But see, she didn't let us know that she couldn't have. She let us think she had the situation well in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And we better do like she wanted us to do.
Yeah.
So she was real good about that. But it was the wonderful companionship that existed between our mother and father that made us have a happy family. That was what made us have a happy family. The little squabbles between the children didn't amount to much.
Mm-hmm.
So we were always happy. Daddy was always loving to us, and when he'd come home from the week in town from working, he always brought us a bag of candy. Something, you know, he never came empty-handed.
Yeah.
And spoiled us. Now, we were spoiled, but we were spoiled in a way different than children. We were spoiled with a lot of love and a lot of petting, and he'd hold us on his lap and, you know, and talk to us and sing to us, and he played his guitar real well, and when he was younger he played the violin or fiddle for dances and things, and square dances, and that's where he'd go on Saturday night. And Mama'd be home raising children, so she caught on to that. She didn't like that, so she put a stop to that. She didn't like to stay home to raise with a sick baby or something while he was out playing at the dances.
Mm-hmm.
But he could play the piano some. He wasn't efficient at the piano like he was. And he had a beautiful singing voice, and he taught, was our choir director in our church at times. And he was just, he was the type that give away everything he had. My daddy was financing about 5 businesses, and he lost every one of them. He just was not a business manager because he didn't know how to handle money. He trusted people. He'd let people get in debt to him, you know, until his business would go broke. He just didn't know how to handle money. And if he had anything, he'd give it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When he sold that place down there, he sold it for $10,000 cash, $1,000 an acre. And back in 1925, 24, 25, that was a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 100,000 now. It'd go just about as far as 100,000 now, that 10,000 then. And so a man had told him where to go, a man, a friend of his own that he knew. He happened to see him on the street. And he said, Rob, I understand you want to sell your property down at St. Charles. And he said, go to wherever Reg said and see if they don't want to buy it. I understand they're buying up property in that area. So Daddy went there and made the deal, and he, you know how much he gave that man for that suggestion? $500 of that money.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to see a mad, wet, setting hen, it was my mama. I mean, she was so mad, I never will forget that, and I was still a child. And she pulled her hair and screamed and hollered. She was so mad at him for giving away $500. That was like, what? My heavens, that was like $25,000 almost to give away that much. And all it was, that man was just suggested where he go. $50 would have been a fortune to give that man. And he gave $500. And so my older sister told me the other day, and she said, yes, and besides that, they paid a 10% tithe on it, which was another $1,000 out of it. So that was $1,500 that they, you know, didn't have when they got to spend the what would have been the $10,000. But he bought a house with it, and it was in need of repair. And this same Uncle Charlie that had his island, it was a carpenter, repaired it. We lived in a little rented house, too. He repaired it. And then we moved in. It had four bedrooms and a big back porch and a big kitchen, which we had another big old table in that kitchen and a dining room that we never used for a dining room because we all cooked and ate in that kitchen. And a living room, and a big porch across the front. Mm-hmm. And we lived there, our family lived there, almost 40-something years. Mm-hmm. So that was our home for a long, long time there. Mm-hmm. But and they were still living there. My sister bought it from my mother and father, and they were still living there when my mother and father died.
Oh, yeah.
They had gone to Palatka, in the meantime,
yeah.
Moved back up here
yeah.
with them, and was living there when my dad died in 1953. Mm-hmm. But... He always provided for us, and I remember Daddy didn't have an education for anything especially but music, but he didn't seem to be able to make any money in music. But he, at one time, he had a barbershop when I was born. That's the type of living he made. He had five chairs, which was, and it was on Riverside Avenue, then near Riverside and Forest Street, you know where that is? It's a fire station right up there in all that
right,
area now.
Right.
But then that was the growing area of town. All this out here didn't even exist. And he was doing so good and had the money to take care of his little family, all six of us and everything. But his eyelids got irritated. The hairs
mm-hmm.
would cause an irritation of his eyelids. And the doctor told him he had to give it up, so he had to sell his barbershop.
Hmm.
So after that, he sort of went from job to job. He wasn't really educated for any other kind of work. But he always made a living so that we never wanted for anything within reason. Now, we didn't have everything we want. We always had plenty of food, and we dressed like all our friends. In fact, when I graduated from junior high school, I was... voted the best dressed girl in the class. But I'll tell you why. I had three older sisters at home, and luckily we were all about the same size, and they had graduated, and they worked. So they would let me wear their pretty dresses to school. So I got the best dressed girl in my
yeah.
junior high school class. But I thought that was quite an honor. I was glad to get that honor.
Yeah.
But we always had about what everybody else had, that we... You know, that was our friend. We didn't live in the society part of town. We would have felt uncomfortable with those people because we didn't have money that matched theirs.
Yeah.
But Daddy always had a job, and we always had our own home. We never had to live in tenements or
mm-hmm.
flats or any of those things. We always had a place to live.
Yeah. Well, I'm just about out of tape.
Okay.
So
I think I've told you everything I can.
This is the end of side two of the second tape of the July 30th, 1986 interview with Camilla Mickey McRae of 5126 Attleboro Street in Jacksonville, Florida. The interview was conducted by David Taylor in connection with the Maritime Heritage Survey Project. End of tape, end of interview.